Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Zap Forum podcast, recorded on August 31st, 2007, Understanding Identity and Service-Oriented Architecture, with guest expert Tufik Boubez, co-founder and CTO of Layer 7 Technologies. This is Ron Schmelzer, senior analyst at ZapThink.
And this is Jason Bloomberg, senior analyst at ZapThink. And it's great to be talking about identity in the context of SOA, because it's a critically important issue and one that doesn't get as much attention as it really should. We talk quite a bit about governance issues and security issues and management issues, and identity is relevant to all of these different areas, but it often gets lumped in with security as though it was a limited problem, but it touches upon so many different parts of really everything that goes on in IT.
And part of it is that, especially for folks who have been through our licensed ZapThink Architect Boot Camp, or have heard us speak at various events, or have read some of our writings, you may have noticed that we talk about identity as solving a core problem of service orientation. That is, as we compose loosely coupled services together, we lose the context of that identity, lose the security context, but really what we're talking about is we lose the identity context. And that makes it really very hard to compose application functionality for multiple systems across perhaps disparate parts of the enterprise, or maybe even across different enterprises, and do so in a way that actually allows us to have some control over the behavior of that system.
Right, so then the challenge becomes one of centralization versus federation. There are areas where it makes sense to centralize identity, but that's an approach that only works in some situations. In other cases, in the business-to-business case and for some large organizations, it's essential to come up with a federated approach that requires a trust relationship. This is what we'll be talking about with our guest, Tufik Boubez, who is the CTO of Layer 7 Technologies.
So, yes, we want to welcome Tufik Boubez to our show, and I guess we'll start off with a quick question for you, and that is, well, what is identity and why is it important to service-oriented architecture?
Jason, Ron, thanks for having me on the show. You guys in the introduction hit the nail right on the head on a couple of issues. First of all, is that service-oriented architectures is not about building, you know, a tightly coupled and a tightly controlled client-server system inside your organization. It's about reusing services from different places, and potentially it's about integrating with partners and clients and so on that have different identity mechanisms. And the identity problem becomes a lot more important and a lot more complex in these kind of distributed, loosely coupled, just-in-time environments. The other major aspect of identity, why it's so important, is that we live in a different world today, in a very, very different regulatory environment. And so governance issues have become very, very important. And identity is a major fundamental aspect of anything to do with governance inside of organizations, because at the end of the day, you're asking the who question. You're asking who can access information, who has access to any kind of information, who owns that information, who is the subject of that information, and who has performed any particular action, right? So all these five who questions that I always like to talk about are fundamental to understanding what's going on inside your IT, inside your organization, and they become very, very important and very difficult to handle once you're starting to build service-oriented architecture. So that's, to me, why identity is so fundamental as you move your organization towards service orientation.
Well, a lot of these identity issues have been with us for many years, right, that predate SOA. So what is it about identity that is specific to SOA? As we move to SOA, there's some sort of identity issue or problem that maybe we didn't have before that SOA now sort of raises to the fore.
Yes, absolutely. You're absolutely right. So we have had those identity issues for a long time. If you think about organizations and the business climate and the business environment has moved, you know, when we had identity issues a long time ago, a couple of decades, let's say, ago, organizations were not, there wasn't a huge emphasis on enterprise application integration, EAI, or even integration with your business partners or your customers. Organizations themselves were identity silos, and that worked pretty well. And whenever you needed identities from another silo, from maybe a partner or a customer, you would do hand coding, some kind of hand coding, or in a lot of cases you would upload the identities into your own identity mechanism and off you were going. But as organization and IT has evolved more towards, you know, the web was sort of one of the first examples maybe a decade or so ago where identities became a little bit more fluid, if you want to think of them that way. where you started looking at things like single sign-on or access control at your website. You know, so if you're a financial organization and you want to start providing online banking, identities become a lot more important because people are starting to access. You're not just dealing with your employees inside the bank. You're actually dealing with your customers, your identity, your customers in an IT way as opposed to just on paper. So that evolved that way. And now we're at the point where we're building service-oriented architectures where there are really no boundaries anymore. There are no boundaries. You are using services from different places. You are reusing them. You are doing a lot of time real-time or on-demand integration with your business partners, with your customers. You're acquiring, your mergers and acquisition activity has spiked, so a lot of companies are acquiring other companies, and then you need to integrate those things. And the best way to integrate these disparate corporations or organizations or entities is through service orientation. But again, they have a lot of different identity infrastructures. So service orientation has really brought the identity problem to the fore like no other technology before.
Well, that's really good. Well, obviously, we have here a pretty close connection between identity and access control and authorization and security. Is that the full scope of what identity is relevant for? I mean, you also talk a little bit about governance. So is there some other context for identity outside of security that relates to governance?
Well, yes, I would say so. There's a lot that has been written on what identity is. And, you know, is identity... is it a representation of yourself, or is it your name? Is it your password? Is it your private key? Is it your X519 certificate? I mean, these are all different aspects of your identity, or maybe different representations that you can use to establish identity. So we need to be very, very careful about when we talk about identity. I think one of the issues that we've had in IT, for example, is that we have co-mingled the concept of identity, authentication, and authorization. So, for example, if you use any of the identity access management systems that are deployed today, you have that problem because when somebody logs into your website, let's say if you're a bank, again, to use that example, in essence, you're doing a couple of different things at the same time in one call. You're checking their identity, you're checking they're authenticating correctly, and you're checking whether they're authorized to do something, to look at a particular account, let's say. And these are very, very fundamentally different things that have been commingled, like I said, and we need to start thinking about separating them. For example, in certain instances, your identity or who you are is not really that important. Your attributes could be a lot more important. And once you authenticate, once you log into my website, I'm only interested maybe in your credit rating and your credit limits, for example. So that becomes another aspect, if I may use that term, of your identity that I'm interested in much more than your name or how you authenticated. So yes, there are lots of different aspects of the identity, to identity other than just, you know, authentication and authorization and these sort of IT-ish type of concepts.
Okay, so let's see if I get this straight. If you log into a website, you might get an identity token that would represent the attributes or assertions about what you're able to do. And then that token would propagate with your session throughout. You're going to be accessing several services as part of service-oriented composition or whatever it is you're doing. That token would now represent your authentication throughout that, but you'd still have the authorization issues for each of these different services. And those services might be on different systems. They might be abstracting different capabilities, or they might actually represent third-party services. So how do you handle that in that sort of service-oriented case where the authentication and authorization are now could be quite separate?
This is where SAML, the security assertion markup language, comes in handy, because SAML allows you to create signed assertions about an identity related to their authentication, you know, whether they have authenticated, using what authentication method, maybe what time have they authenticated at, and how long is this authentication valid for. So it allows you also to deal with things like, well, authorization. You know, this identity is authorized to access these kinds of resources under these conditions. And then finally, the really sort of very, very important part of SAML that gets overlooked a lot is the attribute side. I can insert attributes about this identity that says, well, this identity has this rank or these attributes or this credit rating or this credit limit or what have you, that are sometimes even more important than whether the, you know, how they have authenticated, right? So to me, use a technology like SAML is a great example, and is a great the technology that solves a lot of these problems, or that helps us solve a lot of these problems, because now you can have an authoritative source, an issuing authority that issues these SAML assertions that you can actually take like tokens and carry around with you inside the organization as you go from service to service or from process to process.
Well, that sounds really very interesting. We talked a little about SAML as sort of one of those standards. That's actually a web services standard for communicating those security assertions. But there are other web services specifications that relate to identity. So I think some of the listeners you heard of this podcast may not be familiar with them. So how do we deal with identity and web services specifically, maybe even just less abstractly than identity and service-oriented architecture?
The fundamental spec that I would say, start it all if you want, is the WS security spec. So the WS security specification allows you to insert tokens in the SOAP header. And these tokens will talk about your identity, and it allows you to sort of a variety of different tokens. You can have username, password type tokens. You can have X509 tokens. You can have SAML tokens in the header and so on. There's a couple of different profiles that allow you to insert tokens. So that's the fundamental specification that people need to be aware of for inserting identity type tokens in web service, in the SOAP header. Then, if you start looking a little bit beyond that, so how do I get these tokens, for example? The great example in Federation, if there are two different organizations that have different identity mechanisms, maybe let's say they're partners, and one organization wants to allow certain identities from its partner to access services within its own boundaries. Now, how do you deal with that kind of stuff, right? And so this is, as I mentioned, perfect use case for something like SAML, where the partner will issue a SAML token to the identity and then send that signed SAML token over to the original organization so that identity can access that service. Now, the question is, well, how do you make that call to get that token in the first place, right? So this is where a specification like WS Trust comes in very handy. WS Trust, in essence, allows you to request security tokens from an issuing authority in web services. So if I'm an organization B and I want to access the services of my partner organization A, then I will issue WS Trust request to my issuing authority, and it would give me a token, a binary token that I can use in my web services call to organization A, to my partner, so I can access their services. So WS Trust is the other major the specification for web services that deals with identity. So we have three right now that we can think of, WS Security, SAML, and WS Trust. Then these are relatively mature and well-used. They are actually standards that have been ratified. There's another specification that we're working on right now in OASIS, actually, called WS Federation. WS Federation takes the WS Trust concept and expands it beyond just a particular request for a token and going back. It deals with larger issues such as global sign-out and context, things like that. But that specification is a little bit early in its life cycle right now for people to start worrying too much about it. So I would concentrate on the three main specifications that I mentioned.
We're also seeing a greater uptake in XACML as well with the extensible access control markup language.
Yes.
How does that one fit in?
So XACML has really two different roles, if you want to think of them that way. One of them, it allows you to specify access control policies around identities being one thing, but actually think of them as attributes. So there's attributes about the subject, about attributes about resources and subjects and actions, right? So it allows you to create rules or policies for access control and render those rules in a standard format that anybody can understand. So you can, if you have rules that are portable, that you can port them from system to system, and it codifies who, under what circumstances, and so on, can access what resources. So that's one part of the XACML specification. It doesn't necessarily or specifically or only deal with identity. It deals with the sort of generalized abstractions on subjects and resources and actions. The other aspect of XACML that I think is just as important, and might be actually the low-hanging fruit, in my opinion, is sort of the request-response aspect, where you can actually quest a decision, if you want, from a decision point, from a policy decision point, you can ask them for a decision on an axis, and you get a decision back whether a particular identity or user or what have you is allowed to access a particular resource, right? So that's a great way, for example, to start doing away with all the proprietary type of APIs that are out there, so that we can have a single standard API that allows policy enforcement points to deal with policy decision points around access rules. As you said, it's starting. People are starting to take a look at it right now, but I haven't seen any widespread applications of XACML yet, perfectly honest.
Now, one of the things that you kind of briefly mentioned in all this talk of web services standards and so on stuff, and sort of bringing us back to service-oriented architecture, is you talked a little bit about federated identity. You kind of hinted a little bit about the specs. I would say, well, first of all, what is federated identity, and why is it particularly important to service-oriented architecture?
So you're right, Ron. We have been sort of talking around it for quite some time, I believe. But it goes back to the same fundamental problems, right, where different organizations need to integrate, need to use each other's services, let's say, but they have different identity and access control mechanisms. Well, how do you deal with that situation, right? That's what it really fundamentally comes down to. And this is what identity federation is about, is solving that particular problem of having portable identities or a trust mechanism that allows identities from different domains to access services from a variety of different domains without those domains particularly knowing about them. If I'm an employee of a particular organization, I need to access the resources in a different company, let's say, and there's a trust model and there's some kind of trust agreement between my company and the other company, then I need to be able to do that without the other company having me in their identity system, without them uploading my information into their identity systems, right? And this is a problem, like I mentioned earlier, has been exacerbated by service orientation, because before, you know, we lived in a relatively closed world where anybody who needed to access my system was either an employee of mine, and so they were already in my LDAP, let's say, or if they were not, there weren't that many opportunities, so I would just enter them into my LDAP as temporary employees or what have you, right? And so we dealt with that problem in an ad hoc fashion. But in this new world and service-oriented architectures, we're moving to a service orientation. That doesn't apply anymore. It becomes a much more important problem, as I mentioned.
Yeah, so let's talk a little more about this trust relationship, because that's sort of what this whole federated identity sort of hangs on, is establishing this trust relationship. So as far as an example, the one I like to use is, you know, you log into your travel website and you can get a plane ticket and you can rent a car, and you only have to log in once, even though you're accessing the airline and the car rental systems behind the scenes. So how do these companies get that to work? I mean, how do they establish a trust relationship? What does that mean for their architecture?
Okay, so that's a good question. And there's a variety of ways to deal with that. Just like everything else in IT, right? You're dealing with compromises, and there's multiple ways to skin a cat, pardon the expression, if you're a cat lover. But a trust relation could be based simply on exchange of certificates, X509, you know, and then you know that, and signatures at that point. So you can sign requests from one entity to another, and they trust that request is coming from the entity. It could be that simple. But there are a lot of other mechanisms to deal with that. But much more importantly to me in those kind of scenarios are issues around privacy and access to information, right? So if I'm logging in to a website that has a lot of information about me, and they're going to use somebody else's, maybe in your travel example, I log into my travel agent website, and they have a lot of information about me, but they're going to, you know, get plane ticket for me and reserve a car, get a hotel. How much of that information is being transferred to the other organizations, right, to those other companies? That's a much more important problem in my mind, or issue in my mind that needs to be addressed. I mean, technology can help, but it's not really a matter of technology. You can do practically anything you want with technology, but it's more an aspect, as opposed to trust, it's an issue around privacy and policies, agreement on policies, right? So that to me becomes a lot more important. How do you deal with those kind of situations? How do you give the user a say on what kind of information goes to what kind of companies, right?
Well, that brings up one of the other topics that relates to identity, and that's the notion of policy. And you talk a little bit about federated identity and mechanisms for doing that, and, of course, issues of privacy. And especially when we're doing our courses, we talk about those things as being matters of policy. So
yes.
First question is, what's the relationship between identity and policy? And to what extent is doing identity management an aspect of policy enforcement?
Those two are very closely intertwined. As I would imagine everybody knows at this point, in order to do any kind of service orientation properly, you need to be able to decouple sort of the business logic aspects of your services from the infrastructural and the policy aspects of your services. Policy aspect, by policy I mean things like your security mechanism, your credentialing mechanism, your transport policies, your routing policies, and your access control policies. None of that should be really in your business logic, right? So you separate those two and you build a policy layer that should be declarative, should be configurable, and should be centrally managed. So and this is what when we talk about policy enforcement points, that abstraction of the policy inside your organization that intercepts all requests and makes sure that they conform to policy. Now, as you mentioned correctly, policy is very closely related to identity and access control and all that kind of stuff, because one major aspect of your policy enforcement is making sure that the right identities and only the right identities get access to the services that they need to get access to, right? And so that ties very closely with your identity and access mechanism systems, but also it ties into identity federation if, for example, you're providing services to your partners, ties into the whole concept that we talk about of identity attributes. If, for example, in a great example for that would be in intelligence applications, where maybe certain identities, because of their rank and their classification and their clearance, need to get access to certain types of information, but they cannot or should not be revealing their identity, only their attributes. This is the role of a policy enforcement point, is to take all these kinds of requests and make sure that the policies that you write around these services are enforced. And these policies, a lot of times, are related to identity.
Well, we've sort of circled around then a bit, talking about policy enforcement. That circles us back around to the question of governance. So
yes.
How does policy enforcement relate to governance?
Well, policy enforcement, obviously, is a fundamental aspect of governance. I like to think of governance as having four major aspects to it. One of them, is organizationally. Are you as an organization set up with the right roles, with the right people, with the right skills to deal with governance? The other aspect of governance is around policies and processes, and this is where the policy and policy enforcement point becomes very important, because part of your governance is controlling and knowing what's going on inside your organization and enforcing policies for your organization, for your IT department, right? So this is where policy is a fundamental aspect of your governance. There's a couple of other aspects to governance that I like to think of. One of them is related to your overall enterprise architecture. I mean, do you have the right architecture that allows you to measure and monitor and enforce policies? Is it built the right way that allows you to easily do that? And then finally, there's other aspects around tools and registries and so on that are just plumbing and bits and bytes. But policy is one of the fundamental aspects of governance. Policy enforcement, monitoring, auditing, alerting, all that kind of stuff, which is all part of what a policy enforcement point does.
Well, that definitely, I think, pulls some of those various different concepts together. This is definitely an area that I think a lot of companies are struggling with, not just in terms of point-to-point. A lot of services that people are building are really sort of web services rather than service-oriented architecture. And, of course, as they deal with these issues of composition and across the organizational boundary, I think they're going to start to deal with this. But one of the things that they sort of brought up is this notion of the identity model. And of course, this idea of access methods that are not necessarily identity-centric. So did you want to perhaps dig a little bit deeper into what that is? It's sort of a more advanced topic, but I think, especially for folks who are already dealing with some identity management issues, might be curious about that.
Oh, sure. I mean, this is one of my favorite topics, so I could talk for hours about it. In essence, part of your overall enterprise architecture, and especially if you're starting to look at governance and building a true governance model, you need to start looking at what's your identity model. And by that, I mean what aspects of identity are you going to use inside your organization? We mentioned, we've talked sort of around it a couple of times. We mentioned a few things earlier in some of the examples. So you could have, so attributes are a great example. Are you going to use attributes as part of your identity model? And what kind of attributes are important for you for to build identity models? Because identity, as I mentioned, is not always about authentication or identification. It's not necessarily your name or your account number. It could have a lot of things to do with your attributes and other aspects of your identity. Another really important aspect of identity is something that I like to call scope. And again, I'm not sure if it's a universally accepted word for it. We're trying to use it in our WS Federation work. But scope is an important concept. And let me give you a great example. So I was talking to some tax auditors. I'll give them credit with that example because I like using it. Now, they said, well, you know, I work for the government, and so I'm allowed to look at a lot of your personal data, but only within the context of a particular case. I can't just go and look at your data unless I'm working on the case that involves you, right? So even though my identity and my role gives me access to, say, your social security number, let's say, it only gives me access to your social security number if I'm working on a case that involves you, right? So that's the concept of scope. So just because I have an identity and a rank and a role inside the organization, and that role is essentially allowed to access personal information, it doesn't mean I automatically get access to that information unless I scope down that role to a particular case. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, it definitely does. And I hope your conversation with the tax auditors was purely professional.
Oh, yes. It was purely professional, yes.
Well, that's good. Well, we're almost out of time. So why don't you tell us a little about Layer 7 Technologies and what's Layer 7 doing in this space?
Layer 7 Technologies, we have a suite of products in this space. In essence, we provide security and governance and a policy enforcement point model for service-oriented architectures. It comes under different formats. The major form factor of it is an appliance model. We have a variety of appliances that allow you to do either just anything from pure XML acceleration all the way up to a full network or oriented, service-oriented networking devices. But another form factor of it is software. You can actually, and virtualized software, so you can actually build these virtual appliances to an on-demand type of organization. So in essence, it's security and governance for service-oriented architectures with policy enforcement points and policy application points. And obviously, because of that, we have to deal a lot of time with the concept of policy, with the concept of identity and access management, and with the concept of identity federation. So we have solutions in that space that help do any kind of drop-in type of policy enforcement point.
We definitely want to thank you for participating with us on this podcast. I know that the topics are very rich and obviously one that we can probably keep talking about for a couple of days. On that note, I'd like to thank you for participating and joining us in our podcast.
Thank you very much, guys, for inviting me.
Our guest today was Tufik Boubez, CTO of Layer 7 Technologies. This is Jason Bloomberg, Senior Analyst at Zapthink.
And this is Ron Schmelzer, Senior Analyst at Zapthink, and hopefully you can join us on our next podcast.